This podcast contains explicit language. Viewer discretion is advised.
He got the shot off! Throw it down!
He runs with the 50. He runs with the 40. The guy is drunk.
Here we go.
You're listening to the Benchwarmers and Burners podcast with your host, Josh Lozano.
Oh, shit. Here we go again.
Yo, and welcome back to another episode of the Benchwarmers and Burners podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lozano, part of the Belly Up Sports Network. Make sure, ladies and gentlemen, go down to those show notes below. Give the show a follow. I know I've been tweeting a lot more on my personal page than the actual public page. I'm sorry about that. And also, go check out the Patreon. You know, I'm always post bets and free plays. And it's just nice to help support the show. But this week, I got a very special episode. I got a whole new segment. I made a whole new song for it, too. We're going to be talking law and sports. So I'm not sure what the name is. You know, like Benchwarmers, Bets and Law. Or like Bench and Law. I'll figure that out later. I kind of want to get the segment on before I figure it out. But I got a great guest for this episode. He's a friend of mine. We're UNLV alumni, but he's going to USF right now studying for law. His name is Wiz. I'm not sure. What do you want the audience to refer you as, man?
Wiz is good. You know, only my mom calls me my real name, so Wiz is perfect.
That's what I figured. I didn't know if we were doing government names on this, but... He's a great guy. I'm gonna put his handle in the show notes so you guys can give him a follow if that's something that he wants. But how you doing, my man?
I'm great, bro. You know, just had my 25th birthday, so we're hanging out, just ready to talk some law and some basketball.
Yeah, he's also a full disclosure. He's also a Lakers fan, just like I am. So, you know, that's why we're able to hit it off so much. But he's a great guy, super knowledgeable, and you know what? Speaking since we're talking about the intro music, I tried my best to try and make something that sounds like, you know, the People's Court. Have you ever heard the theme song for that?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's very, you know, get you ready for like a, you know, a good argument back and forth.
Dude, I love that shit. I can't believe when like we were little, dude, SpongeBob used the soundtrack for the People's Court like a ton. And I never noticed it until I got older. I was like, damn, it's the People's Court. But on this episode of, oh, that's the wrong game show music. Got to get in that cop drama feel. We're going to be breaking down the Zion Williamson lawsuit. So for those of you that don't know, Zion Williamson was sued by the Prime Sports marketing firm for $100 million in 2019. Basically, a short story, but we'll get more into it. Zion signed a lifelong contract as a minor that Zion Williamson's entire career, right, would be signed under this one agency. It basically got thrown out in the fact that he was a minor for it. I kind of wanted to get your thoughts about it, and just this would have not happened if we would have just been more open about it. Like if Zion would have just talked to Krzyzewski or just any of the college coaches and been like, hey, I'm about to sign this lifelong contract, right? What do you guys think? This is a good idea?
Exactly.
And I think someone at Duke Law would have been like, no, fuck that. Like, let me read that for you, kid. But
no, definitely. Yeah, it's a very fascinating case. Like you said, you kind of laid out the outline. There's a lot of like underlying facts. So the lady's name is Gina Ford, and she works for Prime Sports Marketing. They're basically like a kind of a talent agency that operates out of Southern Florida. So she spent pretty much all of 2018 and 19 basketball season trying to recruit Zion to join Prime Sports, which was an up-and-coming sports agency. They didn't really have like an official sports agent because you have to get licensed and everything. So she spent that whole year trying to recruit Zion aggressively. And according to, you know, the complaint from Zion, he was basically harassed by her until he would sign the contract. And like you said, it was a contract to be signed for life, and he could only terminate for cause. Typically for cause usually requires like a breach of the fiduciary duty of an agent. So basically she'd have to commit some kind of fraud or some kind of like misfeasance on her part that would violate some type of like conscious, you know, duty of an agent towards their representative. So that was, you know, seems pretty unreasonable, obviously. And 5 days after he started filming this, it was a commercial for, I think, Hobbs and Shaw. I don't even remember seeing the commercial. I don't know if the commercial made it to air, but he made $100,000 and they were taking 15% commission because that was their
contract.
Was their fee. And 5 days after that, he goes and signs with CAA, famously ex not heads, but you know, big shot to CAA, now run the Knicks, World Wide West, and what's the other guy's name? I can't remember the team president's name. Anyway, so Yeah, so he goes and signs with CAA, which is one of the more reputable NBA agencies. And obviously she's upset. You know, she sees that this wasn't, this violates the terms of their agreement. Mm-hmm. And she immediately files suit in a federal court in North Carolina. And just a little bit of a procedural thing, like she was able to file in federal court instead of state court because of this thing called diversity jurisdiction. So basically, mm-hmm. if two citizens from different states get into a disagreement, even if it's over like a state law, a federal court will hear it because, you know, they don't want any hometown bias basically for the resident of that state. So they don't want a state court judge to hear it. So she filed in federal court in North Carolina and, well, she threatened to file if he didn't like rescind it. So Zion filed first, which is the ironic part, but then she countersued for $100 million trying to get basically the earnings of his life. You know, his lifetime achievements mm-hmm. that she's losing out on by him voiding the contract. And specifically, she argued that he misrepresented the terms of their agreement when he went to go negotiate for his new deal with CAA, which is pretty interesting because, you know, it's like she wasn't technically an agent even. She was not a she's not licensed with the NBA, and she wasn't licensed in North Carolina, the state that it was. What'd you say?
Yeah, she's more like a talent. And then to put some context for the listeners, some of her most famous, she was really famous for being like Usain Bolt's like PR person. That's basically like exactly. her claim to fame was that, hey, this the greatest sprinter of all time. I basically made him. Like, you know, that's kind of like her claim to fame at bars. So, she was, yeah, you were saying she had nothing to do with, you know, sports agency. So, and the fact is, you guys got to understand, this island was like a really little, and like,
yeah, definitely. It's pretty crazy. So like you said, she's more a marketing person, and Zion files his suit under this specific North Carolina law. Mm-hmm. Let me pull it up real quick. It's called the UAAA. So mm-hmm. it's a North Carolina law, and UAAA stands for the Uniform Athlete Agent Act. And basically, the law requires that when a collegiate athlete is signing with an agent, the agent both has to be registered to be a sports agent in the state of North Carolina. And when signing the deal, they have to have a specific clause that states to mm-hmm. the athlete that by signing this, they are forfeiting their eligibility. The clause that the contract that they signed, that Zion signed with Prime Sports, clearly didn't have that. Otherwise, he wouldn't be filing suit. And yeah, so basically, Zion files under this technicality and tries to get the whole thing voided. And I know this case made a lot of headlines recently because, you know, the easy headline grabber is that Coach K was received a subpoena to be deposed about paying Zion mm-hmm. money, right? So the reason that that's a part of the case is because procedurally, Gina is trying to have this claim nixed from Zion's lawsuit by saying that Zion received an illegal or accepted an illegal gift from Duke. I think she said like $200,000, something like that. I don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. Don't quote the audience. But basically she's trying to say that by accepting that under the table gift, when Zion signed the agreement with her, he was not a amateur athlete. And thus he did not have to, the clause or the contract did not have to tell him that he would be forfeiting his amateurism. And thus, you know, he wouldn't be able to get the lawsuit thrown out and she could enforce it in the Florida court.
Yeah. Explain mm-hmm. that to the audience about the whole amateurism and why that's like a protection for Zion and other athletes.
Yeah. So the idea of amateurism is basically that you are a student athlete. You aren't mm-hmm. being paid any outside resources to play. This allows you to receive your scholarship from the school. This allows you to be a member of the NCAA in general. And a lot of schools, obviously, you know, everybody hears about how mm-hmm. this is like predatory and everything, but a lot of states yeah. like North Carolina passed these laws now where these sleazy agents can't come in and mm-hmm. just, you know, offer these kids a bad deal or like try and mess up their scholarship if they want to like end up seeing it through and graduating and getting a free degree. Mm-hmm. So the idea of amateurism has been contentious, but states have recognized this weird dynamic to where like these kids are really popular, but they don't know anything about the world and all these crazy creepy people are going to try and like exploit them for money. So,
yeah. Hey, Zion, post this on your Instagram, man. I'll give you $50,000. Zion, just come in my YouTube video. Yeah,
exactly. Or it's like, bro, like sign this pair of shoes for me. I'll slide you $1,000. You know, mm-hmm. that's how they got Terrell Pryor back in the day. Mm-hmm. So it actually ends up working out in Zion's favor for this case, because I believe it was late January, North Carolina federal judge found that there, well, first of all, Coach K refused to testify, obviously. Why would he testify to that? So the North Carolina federal judge finds that he was an amateur when he signed the contract, and thus the UAAA applied and the contract is voided. Obviously, she's going to appeal it, and that's going to keep going. But it's a pretty interesting case because, like you said, it comes up into the context of this whole discussion about amateurism. And the NCAA has done a lot to combat this. They started allowing players to make a profit off their name, image, and likeness. And then we have the whole NCAA football coming back and everything. So it seems like this is kind of like the last breed of like cases to where, you know, these people are going to try and exploit these kids for money that they don't know about. Because, you know, once these kids get buying power from, like, working with the local car salesman, they're like, they could sign some autographs. Now they're not as desperate to make a choice like Zion did to where, like, look, anybody who's going to help me get this bread because we have rent due the next month, I'm going to do it. You know what I'm saying? So it's pretty interesting case. It's going to have a pretty fascinating end because this recent development is pretty hard to overturn. And specifically, it's hard to overturn because of the standard of review when she goes on appeal. So there's different standards of review, which basically means like the new, the appeals court has to look at the case differently depending on the decision that was made. If it's a decision of law and whether the law was applied correctly to the facts or not, the appeals court has to give the most deference to the lower court. I don't want to bore the audience and everything, but basically they're like, yeah, those are my boys down there. And I have to ride with them unless you can show me that they clearly messed up. And if they didn't clearly mess up, then you're out of here. So that's the standard review she's going to have to tackle. And unless you can get Coach K to physically admit to paying Zion under the table, she's pretty much lost.
Yeah, which we know that's not going to happen. But it's very interesting that I'm glad that you alluded to that we're probably not going to see too much of this anymore, especially because you have states that are pass and pay to play in California and Florida, and which is funny anyways, because Florida is, you know, just the recruiting hotbed. It's like, if you look at every kid from Miami actually went to the University of Miami, they would win every single national championship, but they don't, they go to other places. But now with Florida and California allowing this, you know, it's just starting to change. And then another thing that's kind of funny about it was anytime anyone tries to get you to sign a contract for life and your name's not LeBron James, and you know you're getting screwed because LeBron James, he signed that lifelong deal with Nike. But, you know, Zion being a young kid, it's just a crazy story all around. And it's pretty wild, too, to think about. But, yeah, it's just kind of like a domino effect. And this is probably going to be one of the last few really big ones that we're going to see about it until, you know. And that's a good way to transition, but I got to get your thoughts. What's your thoughts about this pay to play anyways? Do you think it's something that's going to be across, you know, because you got guys, especially in football, like, for example, Nick Saban, he said, hey, I don't really, you know, I don't really care. But I know he's just saying that to help his recruitment. Then you have guys like Dabo Swinney that are like, hey, this is ruining the beautifulness of amateurism as he's sitting in his $1 million home. So what's your kind of thoughts about this?
Exactly. So, you know, I think about this a lot, to be honest. I just, you know, I sit back, I drink a nice hot cup of coffee in the morning. And about, you know, 18-year-olds getting paid to play football.
Yeah, I'm painting a picture there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, honestly, you know, I feel like a lot of the conversation around this topic is really disingenuous because, you know, so many people are like, well, you know, if they can play, then all the good players are just going to go to the school with the most money. Is that not happening right now anyway?
Yeah, that's like, what's happening right now.
The fourth stringer in Alabama could start and be a star on, like, most Pac-12 teams, right? So I feel like all the worst-case scenarios that everybody's scared of are already being borne out. And by not having any regulation, having all these things happen on the table, because whether you like it or not, if you believe in this myth of amateurism and the beautiful idea of a student-athlete, these kids are getting money. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, even these kids who end up not being any good, they just get money, X amount of dollars, because, like, they come out of high school with, like, a hoop mixtape or a crazy highlight on overtime. And they have these, like, channels to increase their value to their schools already. So if you just regulate it and if you just open it up to where, like, smaller schools can actually have a chance, and do it legally without, you know, being scared of losing like half of their scholarships, then I think you create a more fair system for everybody involved. And all these kids aren't going to just rush to Florida, rush to Alabama, or rush to, you know, all the ACC schools for basketball in hopes of trying to get, you know, a deal and trying to make it out and just trying to get as much money as you can. If you can go to college, play basketball in, like, I don't know, it's the most random Mountain West league, Wyoming, and make a cool like $30,000 on the side, like, I'm sure that's cool with you if you know you're not going to be like a top NBA prospect. So I think it's a much better move towards that.
Yeah. And then I think that that's the direction that we should go, because I was just pulling up some numbers to kind of put in the context for the audience. So, for example, Zion Williamson is 1 year in Duke. They're saying that he generated, not for the NCAA, but just for Duke itself, they said Zion Williamson himself would have generated close to $5 million for the school itself. Now, it's not counting just the NCAA, you know, all of the revenue that they would have made from March Madness itself. You know, if Zion would have just got a percentage, Zion would have been a millionaire just on that alone. And we saw he had the ankle scare. And that's not counting things like, for example, Zion had to wear Nike shoes because that was Duke's shoes, right? Duke is sponsored by Nike. That's who he has to wear. You know, what if Zion didn't want to? He blew a flat tire because of it. And, you know, there's that whole instance like, oh, you know, Zion's a big ass boy. Like, should he be wearing, like, can the shoes support the man? You know, it's like he's like the Hulk out there. And then, you know, but it doesn't matter to him. And then now you kind of are seeing these kids because they have these other options where Adam Silver was kind of getting pushed by the Australian Basketball League, by these Chinese basketball leagues, by kids going to Europe. You see, like, they lost out on kids like LaMelo Ball, and Adam Silver's like, this is ridiculous. We have a G League. Why are these kids not coming? And then, you know, agents would be like, well, you know, Adam, it's just because you're not paying them. Like, oh, we can go out there, we can get paid. Like, Emmanuel Mudiay foregoed going to college to go basically play in China to make some money, bring it back to his family. And then now the G League is starting to pay top prospects because of it. So I really think that this is, and I kind of want to get your thought. I think that the NCAA understands what the walls are collapsing. You know, the walls of Jericho are falling, and that they really have to kind of adapt. And I feel like they understand this, but they still don't adapt. Like, what's your thoughts? How does the NCAA survive, especially after COVID, because they lost so much, like, all these small programs? Because the football program helps pay for the softball, helps pay for the volleyball, and they had to cut all these smaller programs. So now you have a lot of students who might have been D2 athletes or a D1 athlete, like you were saying, at a smaller campus. Now they can't because of football. So it really sucks that we tie our amateur sports into our universities. But what's your thoughts? How does the NCAA survive from this, and what should they do going forward? And do you think that they would make the right decisions?
For sure. They're definitely starting to see the light. As we've seen, they haven't moved at all in, like, what, 20, 30 years. And then suddenly they rewrite their bylaws where I think in a few years they're going to allow some people to make money off their name, image, and likeness. But a lot of these schools, I think, are going to just, like, do a complete reworking of how they think about amateur sports in college. Because, I think the first big problem is that everybody's fascinated by, like, you know, these weight rooms, these facilities, these universities.
Ultimately,
like, the reason this was happening is because these schools are racing to spend this money so that way they can justify not paying their players. And now they have all these crazy loans that they pulled out to build all these crazy weight rooms, these locker rooms. So I think that's the first expense that's going to go, right? Like, these teams are no longer going to be in an arms race to have the coolest vending machine in the locker room anymore.
Hyperbolic chambers like Goku.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So now that culture is kind of gone, they already have nice enough weight rooms. I think we can all agree on that. Like, Alabama's not itching for a new practice facility. So I think really the big thing that schools are going to start doing is, with this whole, you know, playing coming in, they're going to try and put caps on it. This was a topic that I wanted to discuss, so I guess it's kind of the perfect place to discuss it. So in one of my classes, we've studied, like, the O'Bannon versus NCAA case, the case that got NCAA football thrown out. And basically, they said that it was a violation of antitrust law, which is a set of laws in America that makes it pretty much a felony to create a monopoly on something, or at least to restrict trade. So it's basically a set of laws, like, endeared towards capitalism, and they want to, like, encourage a free market because they think competition raises all boats.
Yeah. So for you kids out there that fell asleep in your elementary school history class, this is like Rockefeller, all that, you know, it's like, why you had one big oil company that would be buying all the little ones. And then at that point, it's just like, we as the consumers are the ones who lose out because we only have one option. They have no incentive to, you know, lower prices. But it wasn't it that the exactly. Supreme Court, wasn't it, there is precedent that, you know, the Supreme Court can kind of waive the NCAA from antitrust laws?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they had always gotten a waiver. But once it came to name, image, and likeness, the court basically found that you can't unreasonably mm-hmm. restrain these players' ability to go out and get some type of funding for their own name, image, likeness. Like, they basically said the NCAA was overstretching their boundaries and restraining that area of a market. So with that going on, you're going to have, like, now that these players can now, you know, receive funding for their likeness, I really think you're going to start seeing schools try and put a cap on it, right? Like, they're going to let mm-hmm. them go out and get their money, but they're going to try and basically put a cap on how much these kids can make, so that way, like, it's even across the board, basically. And I think, I mean, it's kind of like it's up for debate for people in the mm-hmm. field, but I think they're going to get away with it because there's an exception mm-hmm. to, you know, some antitrust laws that the past cases were deciding on. And that's if it's considered like an essential part of your, basically your business, then you're allowed to participate in this non-competitive behavior is the term. So they're going to say, like, look, if we don't put a cap on this, then kids are going to move to just bigger cities or bigger markets and try and make more off of their likeness than they should have. And that would cripple the system. And then schools aren't mm-hmm. going to get any more players. So basically you have to put a cap on it. So I think that's going to be what they try and do. That's just total speculation from somebody that doesn't really know anything. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how they respond. And ultimately, you know, once kids get back in school, they're always raising tuition, unfortunately, you know?
Oof, yeah.
So, you know, I think they're going to survive it. There's an appetite for college sports for sure, especially in like middle America. So I don't think college sports will die, but I just think, you know, the NCAA, they have a smart group of lawyers, and they're going to start, you know, trying to work on the outer boundaries of this new system. And ultimately, I still think we're going to see college football in a form that we're familiar with, but just with some extra rules, and these players are going to start being more visible in the media.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing. There's always going to be a market for college sports, especially because you kind of don't have that sense of alma mater that you do have, you know, like you can be a Lakers fan or you can be a Baltimore Ravens fan, but it's like, I didn't go study at the University of Raven. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't go study, mm-hmm. you know, my professor wasn't like, I like to say, you know, I learned a lot from Kobe Bryant, but he wasn't like, that's what you have. And you have these generational, you know, families that are like, you know, my dad went to the University of Wisconsin. My grandpa went to the University of Wisconsin. You know, I went to the University of Wisconsin. You know, it's like my kid's going to go to the University of Wisconsin. And you have these type of things where it's like, maybe even if your kid doesn't deserve to go to the University of Wisconsin, you're going to go donate a school. You know, I mean, like, you're going to donate a building. So you have this kind of, you know, you have such this sense of pride that you have for your schools that you just don't kind of have in other sports. You know, that's kind of bred and generational. So that's why I do believe that it is going to stay. I'm just curious how. That would suck if that's how they do it, is they do like a flat cap where it's like, okay, this is how we pay mm-hmm. for everyone. Because let's be real, and it's not, you know, like I tune in to go watch LSU versus Alabama, or, you know, Clemson versus Alabama. I don't really go tune in to go see Northern Iowa, you know, versus Southeastern Michigan State, you know?
It's like... Exactly. They have a really, like, the people who watch those games, they're either one, huge gamblers, which, you know,
yeah.
I watch that.
I know. On Thanksgiving, I'm explaining to my dad why I got to put on, you know, Southern Alabama. He's like, I'm a huge fan of Southern Alabama. Burn the boats, baby.
Exactly. We got plus 80, 180 right here, guys. You know, just be quiet. Fourth quarter.
Well, hey, and from another context to the audience, for those of you that don't know the O'Bannon NCAA story, basically, O'Bannon went to his friend's house, one of his homies' house, and his kid was playing NCAA, and he's like, hey, look, it was like one of those classic UCLA teams, you know, and he's like, hey, look, that's you. And I it's funny that he says, yeah, like, it looked exactly like me. And you know, like, now that we see what graphics look like, I kind of wish I could see what the game was, because I promise you, it was like, that person looked like LeBron James, it looked like Allen Iverson, like, all, you know how graphics were back then, like the GTA San Andreas, like all the characters all like all blocks except for like one or two of them. But he's like, yeah, it looked exactly like me. He's like, why can the NCAA make a game where I'm in it and I don't get anything? And it's funny too. That's why you don't see like a Zion Williamson jersey when Zion's playing for Duke. But as soon as he's gone, like as soon as he's out of it, like you'll see on Duke's websites, like Zion Williamson jersey, purchase now. Because now they can make money off his name and likeness. So
exactly. And yeah, you know, like you said, just these players, you know, they just want to cut, and they're totally entitled to it. So I'm pretty excited to see how it goes. I mean, maybe I'm a little selfish. I grew up on NCAA football, and I'm sure you did too. Probably the best video game of all time. Oh, man.
And I'm building. Yeah, I can't wait to put UNLV in the championship.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna be a recruiting machine.
Exactly. You always get the 5 stars no matter what.
Yeah. And it is wild though, because it's kind of, you know, the phrase where it's like, you said the quiet part out loud, because there's people who just do not care. Like Shaquille O'Neal out in the open, he's like, LSU paid me buku money, that's why I went there. He said, I was rolling on the campus with a Hummer. He said, I had a new car, and like, just Shaq just never denied it. He never hid it. And it's funny too, because LSU, you know, they gave him a, you know, like a participatory doctorate. That's why he always like, oh, refer to me as Dr. Shaquille O'Neal. And it's funny because it's like, yeah, like it worked out for Shaq, but nowadays it's a lot harder for kids. And you know, there's some people that are like, hey, you know, I just think that's why I just should all get brought out on the open. Like, it's just like that, you know, the seedy underbelly of all this. Cause if Zion was just allowed to talk out in the open, like I was saying, then he could have talked to Duke itself. He could have talked to Coach K, and he could have been like, hey, like, can you look at this? Is this a good contract? I'm like, no, you should never sign anything for life, you know?
Exactly.
That's how these kids
get
screwed.
They have this whole like don't see, don't tell policy, and you know, it just gets weird. Everybody's trying to like, everybody knows what's happening, but everyone's scared to talk about it. And it just, you know, the kids are the ones that end up getting hurt. So it's pretty sad.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Was there anything else that you really want to talk about this, or any other law subject that you wanted to?
No, that's really the one thing, like the antitrust violations for like potential caps on like the players, name, image, and likeness that they can receive. I think that's the most fascinating area of like collegiate athletics and the law that's going to come up. Other than that, I really think like, you know, it's pretty fun. It's a pretty cool time to get invested in sports law, as like, especially with the gambling aspect being legalized, like there's going to be a lot of cool, you know, niche areas that people can get involved in. So I'd say
I'm glad that you brought up that, because there's something I want to do, as I am I'm a pretty avid gambler. I'm a responsible gambler too. That's why it's like I always have the hotline that you can call for addiction and all that. But I'm a very avid gambler. I want to talk to you. Did you hear about the story about the Super Bowl streaker?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Where he placed the bet himself, right? And then he made it on the field, and then he cashed out.
Yeah, so I got a lot of friends who are asking me questions, so I'll explain it to the audience that doesn't really sports bet that much. But the guy did not bet it. You cannot make those kind of bets here in the United States. That's an offshore thing. Like, for example, that's why you can't bet on the election here, because it's just something that you can control. They feel like if you start betting on things and it has enough money and there's enough juice in it, it'll start swaying the outcomes of things. That's why you can't bet on the national anthem, like how long it's going to be. That has to be an outside one, like for example a streaker. But these offshore books, like, you know, you can be betting some kind of book in Guadalajara or something like that, you know, these small offshore books, you know, it's like you're betting on some offshore book in Cancun. They're not held to the same regulations that the, you know, William Hill and all the other ones get here. So the guy, basically him and a bunch of his homies made bets. Bovada's one of them too, but Bovada's considered an offshore book, but they operate here. It was like plus 1,000 that a streaker would cross it, would run across. By the time the kickoff happened, it got bought down all the way to a plus 100, and you know, the guy couldn't keep his mouth shut, and they basically voided the bets for it. But I want to talk to you. Do you think that that's going to be started being an issue? Because you know, we do our regulations here in the United States. That's why you can't like bet on that kind of things. But now, you know, in the age of the internet and all that, it's so easy. Before, people would actually have to buy a plane ticket and go to, you know, like Guadalajara. I'm just and all these like offshore books. But now you could just go online, pop on the internet, make an account. So
exactly, I think it is really fascinating because, like you said, you have that over border transactional aspect. So I mean, in other countries, it's illegal, you know, to gamble. So it really depends on where the book is at. But with gambling becoming legal here in the U.S., I think it gets interesting to where, like, you know, are they going to try and, like, hold those kind of, you know, transactions within the U.S.? Because, I mean, you know, we have crazy, like, apparatus for technology. I'm sure maybe they can, like, start, like, restricting those outside areas and only holding it within the U.S. now that it's legal. You know what I'm saying? So, I think it's really going to be crazy to see how, like, crackdown on, like, the weird, not really, like, front and center parts of the gambling sphere that they're going to start regulating. Because, like you said, having those kind of, you know, off-kilter bets is really going to, like, inspire people to try and, like, make a quick flip. Like, I mean, as much as dumb as the guy is at talking about it, it's pretty funny that he really thought that he could get away with it. So
yeah, he just had to keep his mouth shut.
Yeah,
stay.
Bro, he would have made so much money if he would have just kept his mouth shut. But now it's like he's a registered sex offender. I'm pretty sure because that is public indecency, and it's exactly. Like you got none of the bread for it. So
yeah, no, he fumbled the bag for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is crazy because he actually scored a touchdown. So you would think, like, you know, the ball crossed the plane and everything. But yeah,
yeah. I mean, it is. I don't want to say it's sad because it's like the guy didn't lose out on anything, and he should have just kept his mouth shut. He would have made all that money from the Super Bowl. But exactly. the countries with the top rated offshore books are Antigua and Barbados. So that's where if you want to go. Which is funny because back then, you know, if you had buku money, you'd take a little private jet, go out there, put $100K in cash. But now, like I said, anyone, Joe Schmo, could just on their couch make an offshore account. But that's pretty much the last like legal thing I had to talk about. You want to, before we wrap up, you want to get into some fun NBA MVP selections and all that? I kind of want to get your take on that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I definitely, this is another thing that crossed my mind when I'm making that morning cup of coffee, you know, adding the milk, thinking about, you know, is Joel Embiid worth it?
was the process worth it?
Exactly.
All right, so here. All right, Wiz, you're on the clock, man. If you had to give me your MVP right now, who would it be and why?
You know, we're both diehard Lakers fans. If you slit our wrists, we're bleeding purple and gold. Yeah. But I got to give the MVP to Joel Embiid, man. Like, he's really... I know it's a narrative-driven award, and his story is really, I think, the most compelling. He's been this North Star for the NBA fans and the people who follow the league, right? Like, oh, if he can just get in shape, if he can just stay healthy, if he can just, like, develop his passing a little bit, then he'll be this. And usually when those things happen, it never comes to life. You never get to see it. And it's coming to life right now. Even though Ben Simmons' scoring is down, he's really opened Ben Simmons' game with his passing, because now Ben Simmons is setting all these screens off ball and cutting. So I think he's opened up Ben Simmons. He's really changed, like, the future of the Sixers. And I really think they're going to make the finals this year, as great as the Nets are and everything. That's cool. You know, I think they're like an Instagram team. I don't know if they're a basketball team.
Oh,
so I think Joel Embiid. Yeah, I said it. You know, I'll take the heat for it. But I'm taking Joel Embiid. Give me that. And then I think an underrated player in the whole MVP conversation is Dame. The Blazers are the fourth best team in the West right now without CJ McCollum. Nurk's hurt, and he's putting up crazy numbers. I think he's almost averaging 30, like 8-3? I can't remember his exact numbers, but they're fourth in the West, and they have the same exact record as the Sixers, who are the best team in the East. So I think Dame should definitely at least get a top five finish this year.
Yeah, and Dame's averaging 29.8 points, so we'll round up to 30. We're nice here. We like rounding up, make even numbers. So averaging 30 points, 7 assists, 45, 38, 93 shooting split. So
yeah, he's having a crazy season. And, you know, I feel like he's every basketball player's favorite basketball player. You know, he just handles his business. All he does is put on for Portland. Whether or not that ever results in a title, it will remain to be seen. But you got to respect his game. and he's always going to push his team to their maximum potential. You got to respect that at some point.
Yeah, I think the issue with Dame is it's not even an issue with him. It's just an issue with Portland. It's just they're just never going to be able to really get free agents because they're not one of the, you know, the core four, core five premier destinations. And it sucks too, just because it's like the pieces that they do have, they just can't stay healthy with them. But I love that Embiid selection. I totally understand it too. I've been telling everyone, it's like, I think LeBron's going to get it because it is a narrative based award. But Embiid is having a better season than LeBron because for LeBron, this is like, other than his shooting splits, this is kind of like a down year for LeBron, if that makes any sense. Like, he's averaging less rebounds, less points, and less assists than he normally does. But he's MVP contention because, you know, the media, if it's like a tie, if it's close, then they're going to give it to LeBron just because they feel bad that they haven't been giving it to him. But that's a discussion for like another podcast. But all right, my next one is, who do you think, so you said that who do you think's coming out of the East and who do you think's coming out of the West? All right. And I kind of think I already know because what you were saying about the Nets, but I got to hear why.
Okay. Yeah. So ultimately, like, and taking the Lakers out of the West, we're not looking great right now. AD, Lord, please, somebody fix his ankle, his Achilles, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's never good, you know, when you hear like a mixed bag of reporting around a player's injury, and that's what we're getting with AD right now. So I hope that they sit him down. I'm cool with the Lakers mm-hmm. finishing like third or something in the West. And genuinely, when you look at the Western Conference, who's really, you know, going to contend with them? Everyone wants to talk about Utah. Congratulations to them. They're having a fantastic season. But mm-hmm. ultimately, like, you're maybe not your best player, but your most valuable player right now is Rudy Gobert. And if your most valuable player is a center who doesn't have any offensive game, I don't think you can make it to the finals, frankly. You got to, you know, everybody knows how playoff basketball goes. It's you, then me, slow possessions, one-on-one, try and get mm-hmm. a bucket against tough defense. And I just don't know if they have a guy who can do that against a Lakers defense. The Clippers are always going to be there. I'm still taking mm-hmm. the Lakers. And then in the East, I expect to see the Nets and the Sixers in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm taking the Sixers in seven. It's going to be a tough series because mm-hmm. the Nets can just get hot and hit 35 threes, and then what are you going to do, you know? But I just don't think they have an answer for Joel. And I do think, not necessarily an answer, you never have an answer for someone like James Harden, for someone like Kyrie or KD, but they have solid perimeter defenders. They have, I'm not going to say Tyrese Maxey is, you know, he's not Chauncey Billups. He's not the glove. But he can make it a difficult time for Kyrie, at least. You know, he can make him work a little bit. And then Ben Simmons is probably the best perimeter defender in the league. You just stick him on KD. And then James Harden's going to be James Harden. But ultimately, if you're scoring every time down the floor in the paint, what can mm-hmm. the other team really do? Because at some point, you're going to miss a three, right? So I think over a seven-game series, I have the Sixers coming out of the East.
Yeah. We'll see, because I was super high on the Sixers. I was telling people I had Sixers. I thought the Sixers could come out of the East, and everyone, especially Raptors fans on Twitter and at the Belly Up Sports Network, they're just like, Josh, you are crazy. The Sixers have never done anything well. But it's like every year, man, I'm like that crazy dude that has a sign that says the end of the world's happening. I'm like, the Sixers are good, baby. I'm always like, the Sixers are good. And it's like, I don't know if I relate with Sixers fans because we both despise Boston. Like, maybe that's why I like mm-hmm. like him so much, or like, because I just like Embiid. He's such a lovable guy. But the thing about no team has a bigger gap between their floor and their ceiling than the Sixers. Because if the Sixers are clicking mm-hmm. and they're playing as well as they can, they're almost unstoppable, because who can really match up against Embiid? Like, even AD, who's a phenomenal defender, is not the type of defender that does well against, you know, but that's why they got guys like Marc Gasol. But Marc Gasol was a lot better at it, you know, like 2-3 years ago. He has lost a step. It's just a matchup nightmare. But that's the issue with the Nets. I mean, because to me, I agree with the West. It's like, it's LeBron's and AD's to lose, depending how healthy AD is. But even if AD was like, you know, 50, 55%, 60%, still LeBron. It's like LeBron's it's like almost a guaranteed finals ticket. So it's just really hard to bet against him. And that's why people, you know, that's why the whole media is like, well, you know, it's a regular season award. It's not a playoff MVP. Because if it's a playoff MVP, we'd always give it to LeBron. So that's kind of why, you know, they're like, we're going to give it to him this year. Fuck it. We don't care what anyone says. But for the Sixers and the Nets, I think it boils it down to, the Nets have a better team built for the playoffs, without question. That's not debatable. Like, you guys can, you know, give me advanced stats and numbers, but like you were saying, when the playoffs happen, you know, and the play breaks down and there's 5 seconds left on the clock and you just throw it to someone, who can get you a shot? Well, they got three guys who can just get it, you know, like Kobe-style-esque. The Sixers, who do they really have? Embiid, sort of, but he's getting there because he's not really like a perimeter style, you know, but he's starting to shoot it. He's a monster down low. So you give that edge to the Nets, but like, who on the Nets can possibly stop Embiid? That's no one. So that's kind of like, you know, the immovable force versus the unstoppable object kind of argument. It's like, what's going to give first? The fact that the Nets have three safety valves, or the fact that Embiid, there's just no one that can stop them? So that's interesting. I hope that's what happens. I don't want, you know, like, Raptors are cool, Boston's cool, Giannis is cool. I don't want any one of those three cutting in and interrupting it, because that's what I want in the Eastern Conference Finals. I need Nets and Sixers.
Exactly. And we've already seen Giannis, as cool of a guy he is, he's an amazing player. I don't know if he's built like that yet.
We'll talk about that as our last topic, but I want to get your thoughts on Giannis. I love Giannis. I love watching him. But like we were saying, I'm a huge believer that you need a guy, a perimeter-based guy. That's why I said Embiid's kind of like it, but he's not. You need a perimeter-based guy who can just get you. Like, if the Sixers still had Jimmy Butler, I'd be like, that's perfect. That's everything they need. They have the superstar in Embiid. They have the defensive anchor in Ben Simmons. And then you have the guy, Jimmy Butler, who, like, 5 seconds left on the shot clock, play broke down, just throw it to Jimmy, and Jimmy will try and get us a shot. But the Bucks don't have that because Giannis tries to, which I'm glad he's not afraid of the moment, but he just can't. That's just not who he is, you know? So when they start dropping back and playing these, you know, where they basically double him on a drive and then the center plays off and he sags off the three-point line to guard him, it's just hard, you know? So that's why I think it's, unless Giannis either develops a shot or they get a guy who can take those kind of shots for him, I don't think that the Bucks are ever going to be able to get super far in the playoffs, which I hope that doesn't happen because I really like Giannis and I want him to win at some point.
Exactly. So let me ask you this. What do you think about the idea of having Giannis as your center? Like, I know since he came out in the Jason Kidd propaganda where he's a point guard, he's a 6'11 point guard, but that kind of stuck in everybody's mind. But like, he's one of the best screeners in the league. The guy's huge. He absolutely obliterates people on the screen.
And he's so fluid,
They do it so rarely, and then he's one of the most athletic human beings to ever walk the face of the earth. Why is this guy not, you know, setting screens for Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday on every play, catching the short roll and creating off that or going to the rim? I just think they're missing a huge opportunity in Milwaukee by having him trying to like develop this weird perimeter game. If he could develop a 15-foot hook shot, he could develop a little pull-up jumper, not huge, like maybe 12 feet out. Then I think he's now set up as like this player who can change like the geometry of the defense. Like, I mean, because right now they have him like trying to create offense from the perimeter, and that's cool. But the man's 6'11". The defense is excited every time he's trying to like shoot a wide open three. I'm a big proponent of like, whatever you're doing, if the defense is happy that you're doing it, you shouldn't do it. So I just think that if Giannis was, you know, if he just reworked his skill set or just started like playing more towards the basket, I think he would be a lot more effective. Because like you said, you got to throw it down to 5 seconds left on the clock. If he's your center, he's so fast, 5 seconds left on the clock, you can throw it down to him. You just force the other team to pull their center, because right now they can stick their center on Brook Lopez and they're not worried about it.
And they have a big
guy who can, you know, protect the rim. But if you have Giannis as your center, now you can't play in an original center. You got to have somebody athletic, fast, but you're giving up size. So 5 seconds left on the clock, Giannis now becomes a factor going towards the rim, just trying to draw a foul. So I think if they could just see that in Giannis, I think it would change like the whole makeup of their team.
Yeah, I think the issue with, I agree that they should be playing Giannis more. And then I 100% agree, you hit the nail on the head that he needs to be the screener more, because you see it all the time. But I just don't think that they ever had the proper guy to really feed him. Kind of like one of those like Lonzo Ball style ball hawks that it's like, Giannis, you're open. Or because you see nowadays with how small the league is, there's just so many guys like John Collins and Clint Capella and JaVale McGee right now in Cleveland, or Dwight Howard when he was on the Lakers, where these guys just set a pick, they just roll to the basket and they get a lob, because who's ever the guy that's supposed to be protecting the role is either not athletic enough to stay in front of them, or they're too small, too little, because they switch when they do the pick and roll that they can't catch the lob, you know? So I think Giannis would just be unstoppable. But I get it. They're trying to feed him with the offense. They're trying to get better. My thing is, I think there's like a mental aspect with Giannis because he's a guy who every year he gets so much better because he was a twig. He was so skinny his rookie year. Now you might say like, oh, steroids and all that, but that's what I'm not here to talk about. And then like his handles, his passing, adding double teams. Like Giannis has gotten so much better at everything he's ever done. And he's a super hard worker. But it's like, so then why isn't his shot or his free throws catching up? I think it's like a mental thing at this point. And that's kind of hard because imagine, you know, there's some people who don't like public speaking. Like you have an assignment to do and people clam up. Like this guy is taking threes, wide open threes. Like people are begging you to take it. And then when you miss it, you know, fans are airballing. And, you know, I feel like there's a huge mental aspect of it because he's drastically improved everything he's ever, you know, ever had flaws in dramatically. And he's a super hard worker. So why isn't his shot falling? I think there's like a mental thing with it. So same thing with Ben Simmons. So.
Oh, for sure.
Because Ben Simmons is like plateaued as a rookie.
Maybe they just have like genetically or however they're made up. So people just can never learn how to shoot because as much as it is about hard work and repetition, you look at Russ, you know, a legendary hard worker and a crazy grinder, Giannis, Ben Simmons, all these guys have great reputations as like being guys who work hard, work on their game, work on their bodies, but you can't develop the shot, right? So I think some people just, is it a depth perception thing? I don't know, but so.
Get some context. Yeah, so hey, Wiz, I just wanted to say thank you, man, for coming on. Hopefully it's not going to be the first and only time. It was a real pleasure, and thank you so much for the insight.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I appreciate the reach out. You know, I'm a great listener of the podcast. You do a great job. Shout out to all the fans out there. We're a little squad, and I can't wait to come back on. So hope you guys have a good day. Josh, thanks for being the man. Let me come on.
Yeah, no problem, man. Stay safe out there. And what's the mascot at USF?
USF is the Dons. You know, we got Bill Russell as an alumni. It's probably the biggest one. So,
all right. Well, go Dons then.